Welcome to your Sunday Reader. Today we'll be discussing the readings for the 17th Sunday in Ordinary Time, 2008. A reading from the first book of Kings. The Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream at night. God said, "Ask something of me, and I will give it to you." Solomon answered, "O Lord my God, you have made me your servant, king, to succeed my father David. But I am a mere youth, not knowing at all how to act. I serve you in the midst of the people whom you have chosen, a people so vast it cannot be numbered or counted. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding heart, to judge your people and distinguish right from wrong. For who is able to govern this vast people of yours?" The Lord was pleased that Solomon made this request. So God said to him, "Because you have asked for this, not for a long life for yourself, nor for riches, nor for the life of your enemies, but for understanding, so that you may know what is right, I do as you requested. I give you a heart so wise and understanding that there has never been anyone like you to now, and after you there will come no one to equal you." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Lord, I love your commands.
Lord, I love your commands.
I have said, O Lord, that my part is to keep your words. The law of your mouth is to me more precious than thousands of gold and silver pieces.
Lord, I love your commands.
Let your kindness comfort me according to your promise to your servants. Let your compassion come to me that I may live, for your law is my delight.
Lord, I love your commands.
For I love your commands more than gold, however fine. For in all your precepts I go forward. Every false way I hate.
Lord, I love your commands.
Wonderful are your decrees, therefore I observe them. The revelation of your words sheds light, giving understanding to the simple.
Lord, I love your commands. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, we know that all things work for good for those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. For those he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, so that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And those he predestined, he also called. And those he called, he also justified. And those he justified, he also glorified. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure buried in a field, which a person finds and hides again, and out of joy goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant searching for fine pearls. When he finds a pearl of great price, he goes and sells all that he has and buys it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net thrown into the sea, which collects fish of every kind. When it is full, they haul it ashore and sit down to put what is good into buckets. What is bad they throw away. Thus it will be at the end of the age. The angels will go out and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the fiery furnace, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth." "Do you understand all these things?" They answered, "Yes." And he replied, "Then every scribe who has been instructed in the kingdom of heaven is like the head of a household who brings from his storeroom both the new and the old." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Welcome to your Sunday Reader, the greatest podcast ever recorded.
Today.
Today, yes.
In Canandaigua.
And I guess we don't need to introduce ourselves after that. I'm Brian, and I'm here today with Dawn.
Hello.
And we're having a fun day today, and just real high on our podcast, apparently. Or at least I am.
I don't know. I just want to keep it, you know, relatively real.
Anyway, Dawn, did anything strike you with the readings today?
Well, there's a lot of things. And I think this is the last week that we're going to have parables about the kingdom for a while. So those of you that have been tuning in the last few weeks, this will be the last of it for a while. And this one, we have three separate parables in this. And I sort of like these ones a lot because the first one talks about a buried treasure and sort of you find your treasure by chance. The second one about the merchant who searches for a pearl, they're finding, obviously, your treasure by searching. And then the third one is like a net thrown into a sea and you're picking apart which are the good fish and the bad fish, and that's sort of like discernment. And I got to thinking about, we all come to know God through those three different methods, by chance, by searching, and discernment. For many of us, probably, you've had a time when all of a sudden you looked into the sky and you just realized how great God is. And that's almost like by chance. Or maybe you've been searching scriptures for a certain answer to a question and something was revealed to you. So obviously you're searching. And then discernment comes in many ways. But I guess the prime example, when I'm looking at you, Brian, you're discerning a vocation and seeing how God is calling you. And so,
and really all of us should be discerning vocation continually. Even people who have quote-unquote found their vocation still have to discern how to live that out every day. So it's not just, you know, me or a priest or anybody like that. That's the example we throw around all the time. But everybody is constantly discerning their vocation. How is God calling you to live in this particular moment? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when you mentioned that, Dawn, before we recorded, I'd never thought of it in those terms and stuff. One of the things that I tend to think about a lot is with that story of the treasure in the field. And I thought, the one thing that I find interesting, or the other thing, even with the merchant of who's searching out the pearl and everything, in both of those instances, somebody sells the item. They sell the field, they sell the pearl. And what it is I think it shows, too, that not everybody recognizes the worth of the kingdom or sees the value or even sees the kingdom, because obviously if the person knew what they had, they weren't going to sell the field with a buried treasure in it. Or if you knew that you had this pearl of great price, you probably wouldn't be selling it so easily. Or, well, I guess he does sell it kind of expensively. He has to go out and sell everything in order to buy it, but who knows, maybe you wouldn't end up selling it if you really realized how precious this pearl actually was. So that's another take on it. And again, it kind of goes to that whole thing that we talked about two podcasts ago where we said parables don't have meanings that can be exhausted. And I'm sure our listeners probably can come up with some other meanings and interpretations of the parables. And sometimes when you listen to them over and over, you find something new. Actually, that happened to me last week with my homily. We talked about it on the podcast, the parables, and I was starting to write something. I had a new idea all of a sudden. I saw the parable in a way I hadn't seen it before, completely reworked my homily. You can read that on workingtobeathell.org, by the way. It's a free plug for myself.
You are quite full of it today, Brian.
I am. I don't know what it is today. It's a good day for a podcast, I think.
Well, one of my questions that I had was about the ending of the gospel passage. Then every scribe who's been instructed should bring forth from his storeroom both the new and the old. And I was a little confused. What exactly is Jesus talking about there?
Well, I think that one way of thinking about this is we have to remember what is Matthew's, the author's audience and his intent, and what is he doing. And Matthew's writing to a community that's largely Jewish. However, they do have Gentile members in the community as well. And one of Matthew's prime concerns is to show that this is a continuation of Judaism. This Christ is the fulfillment of Judaism, but he's trying to say we're not starting a new religion here. This is not something new. And so I think that's the old when we talk about it. And then you do have the element of new, though, because there's a new take on this religion, and we also have new people joining us. We've got the Gentiles who are being welcomed into this community, and they can be seen as the new. So when we look at the kingdom of heaven, it's both the new and the old. So you have the chosen people of God and these new people who are now joining the kingdom as well. So it's not just the people of Israel. And that was always an understanding that the Jewish people had, was that they were God's chosen people,
But they kind of viewed the end times as everyone gathering around Israel. Israel would be the center with everyone gathering around it. And I think that when you have that image, you can see that there'd be new people joining too, obviously, with Israel at the center. And so I think that there's two important elements for us to take. One is, you know, this is a new take on it, but Jesus never says, let's just throw out all the old stuff. It's not important anymore. Let's get rid of the law. Jesus never says to get rid of the law. A lot of times, I think we tend to interpret it that way because he's critical of the way the law is applied in many cases. But he never says, you know, I came so we can get rid of this old law now and let's just throw it out and pretend it was never mm-hmm. there. Which a lot of times, sometimes, you know, we can tend to do that in our own thought. We sit here and say, well, Jesus kind of abolished the old law. But he doesn't. We say he fulfills the old law. And in doing that, sometimes he's rendered certain things meaningless. So, for example, why don't we sacrifice the way the Jewish people do? Well, because Jesus' sacrifice was the fulfillment of those Jewish sacrifices. The Jewish sacrifices were such that they were offered over and over again for the forgiveness of sins, but they were somewhat ineffective because they had to be offered over and over again, whereas Christ's sacrifice is the perfect sacrifice, and it fulfills all future need for sacrifice. It's the penultimate sacrifice, if you will.
Oh, I love that word.
Don't you?
Penultimate. Love it.
Excellent. But I mean, I think that, so at the end of that gospel, it's kind of just this reminder of, you know, we're not throwing out the old here. He's giving us all these new analogies for the kingdom of God, these new images, but it doesn't mean let's throw out the old. We have to keep the new and the old, and you have to hold them in tension kind of together.
Mm-hmm. You know, hearing you talk reminded me of the first reading, not that you're Solomon, but how Solomon asks for wisdom. That's the only thing that he asked God for. And so God grants it to him, which made me think about hearing these readings. In each of them, in hearing the gospel, I mean, in each of the parables, the person needed wisdom to recognize what he has found, or she has found. Mm-hmm. And so, and how that was just an interesting way that the church paired those readings up to me.
Yeah, you're right. And you, we've talked a lot of times how the first reading a lot of times right. has some effect on the second reading, or in the gospel reading, sorry. The second reading's kind of independently thrown in there. It's usually a continuous epistle that we read, so we just read those straight through. But the first and the gospel usually go together. And you're right, yeah, there's that image of wisdom. I think you're right on that there. And you need it, you know, for the discernment, for the what's a weed, what's a, well, it's not weeds and weeds, I was thinking last week's, what's a good fish, what's a bad fish, sorry. Similar kind of analogy, you don't want the bad sushi, as we all know.
That's right.
Get seasick.
But that wisdom comes in because we are, in our world today, God asks us to give up things, to sell what we have, to go after the kingdom of God, and I've been trying to think of some examples in my life, and there are many, of things that if I literally had to go and sell everything that I have, what would be the hardest thing for me to sell? What do I hang on materially to most? And I've got quite a list.
Well, that's always the case, I think. Well, the other thing, though, with this whole, you know, as we're talking about wisdom and stuff that I think is good to look on is the idea that wisdom came from prayer for Solomon. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of the same place that it should come from for us. A lot of times it's not something that you can just read, but it really, I think knowledge comes from certainly reading and you can get knowledge that way. But we distinguish between knowledge and wisdom mm-hmm. in our faith tradition. Knowledge would be factual knowledge. Wisdom would be knowing higher truths, such as things like right from wrong, but more spiritual truths and insights. And I think that you can only get those from prayer, and still I think you have to be lucky at the same time, too. Not everybody can get that from prayer, too. Some of us try many, many years and still don't get anywhere with wisdom.
Yeah, God has intentions for each of us, and that, for me, is very important. I used to be envious of people that could just hang on, or just, it seemed like, I don't know, they were so great at, they were so insightful, and so I've had to learn that, you know, that we're each given different gifts. And
mine is stealing the insights from those people and putting them into a homily.
Okay,
then people come up to me and say, oh, that was so great. I'm like, yeah, who did I steal? Which one of my professors did I steal that from?
In youth ministry, we call that holy borrowing.
That's
so
right.
You can do that.
That's right. Well, we talk about that same thing in in seminary all the time, that it's not plagiarism when you do it in a homily. You know, it is if you do it on your homework. It's not in a homily.
Well, speaking of wisdom and knowledge, I'm going to throw you another hard question. In the second reading today, we have talk of predestination and things like that. And I remember being in like eighth grade social studies class, and one of the teachers talking about, you know, some Christian denominations talk about predestination and blah, blah, blah. And it's so funny. I can even like feel sitting in that class, the temperature, and you know, it's just, anyhow, that's a side comment. But anyhow, I wondered if you might be able to talk a little bit about it, how as Catholics we would read this reading.
Right, so predestination and justification and glorification, all these things are really hot topics amongst Christians a lot of times, and they are a cause for division. As Catholics, when we talk about predestination, we're always holding it in tension with free will. And the way to kind of think about predestination is we certainly say that God is all-knowing, and so he kind of knows what we're going to do. But as Catholics, what we'd say is, in that sense, some people would call that a predestination in that God already knows what we're going to do. He knows what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow morning and, you know, when I'm going to die, all that kind of stuff. But he knows it. The fact that he knows it doesn't mean that I don't have free will. Part of it comes from the fact that God is outside of time, which is completely beyond anything that we can fathom. So for God, there's not really a before or an after, but everything that happens, happens at one single instant for God, is the way to think about that. Whereas for us, it unfolds over time. So we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, but God does, because for God, tomorrow and today and yesterday are the same instant for God. So he doesn't know it kind of like a soothsayer or anything when he knows the future. He just knows it. But predestined, we aren't predestined in terms that we don't have free will. Now, we would say that we are predestined in terms that we have a calling, a mission, that kind of thing that God calls us to. But we always have the free choice on how to respond to that calling. So the fact that I'm predestined or that God has called me to something, you know, I believe it would say to be priesthood for myself, does not mean that God has forced me to become a priest. I still have to openly choose and embrace that calling, or I could reject it and do something else. Or, you know, if, for example, if my call were to be a married person and I was choosing to become a priest, that'd be a way of rejecting my call. It wouldn't necessarily be a good thing. So it's one of these things where we have to be kind of cautious. We say that God doesn't force us into action. He doesn't force us to do something. He calls us to things, but we have the freedom to do that. And then we talk about justification and glorification, and certainly those are two things that only come from God, we would say. But there are ways that we can do actions and do things that we would say that lead us towards the path of justification or away from the path of justification. So when we do good things, then, or things that are grace-filled actions, you know, you help the old lady across the street kind of thing, we're hopefully working towards justification. When we sin, we're moving away from that. Ultimately, we say it is Christ is the only one who can justify, but at the same time, we say that we can participate in that in some way, that we, because we do have this free will, we participate in it, ultimately knowing that nothing that we do earns us really anything, that it is all a gift from God. And same thing with glorified, because to be in the presence of God is when we are glorified, but that only happens when we're in the presence of God. And that's something that we would say we don't have the ability to do it all on our own. That is something that's completely a gift from God, is being glorified.
Wow, that was quite good, I must say.
And that was enough to fill up more than our podcast time.
Great.
But it was kind of like a little bonus on our fabulous, wonderful podcast.
Oh, boy.
And we hope people will join us next week, and we'll probably have an even more fabulous podcast. Actually, we won't, Don. Well, we'll do it from Notre Dame. So we'll be live. It'll definitely be more fabulous. Hopefully, we'll have some of the teens from the retreat, the service retreat, and talk a little about service as well as the gospel readings next week on your Sunday Reader. Have a good week. God bless.